everybody. This is Direct Impact, and this is what we are going to be talking about.
Monsieur Delongue! Monsieur Delongue!
That's just a clip that I prepared for you. It's a scene that gets absolutely crazy in the French Parliament. I'm going to show you the whole thing. I'm Rick Sanchez. This is Direct Impact. Let's do it. All right, that's where we're going to begin, in the French Parliament, part of which you just saw a little while ago. So the French MPs are having this very serious discussion, by the way, about joining Spain and Ireland and Norway, right? Norway was the third country. Those countries just recognized, as you saw here, we showed you that report. They recognized Palestine, and now the French are arguing that they should do the same, that they should join those countries. Well, that's when all hell breaks loose. Here it is.
Va continuer, madame, la France.
Monsieur, Monsieur Delongue. Monsieur Delongue. Vous avez un rappel à l'ordre avec inscription au procès verbal jusqu'à saisine du bureau. C'est inadmissible.
Most of that screaming, by the way, was, did you see that guy who was holding up the Palestinian flag? Well, that's what all the fuss was about. This guy's name is Sébastien Deloge, and he has now been suspended. He's been thrown out of the parliament for holding up the flag. Now, keep in mind, 145 of 193 countries in the UN have recognized Palestine. Several countries in Europe are starting to join in, which is what is making Israel and the United States bat crap crazy with anger. They feel like they're being defied by these countries. So here's why this French scene that I just showed you is so important, right? France is a G7 country. France is a G7 country. No G7 country has recognized Palestine. And if they do that, if they break the ice, if the French do so, they would be the first. So it looks like each and every day, as we and others report on this, things are picking up steam momentum-wise against Israel, it seems. Manila?
Yeah, Rick, it's funny about the Palestine flag when you contrast it to Nancy Pelosi unfurling this gigantic Ukrainian flag in Congress, as you might recall.
I thought about that, too.
Right? Like, yeah. I mean, it was applauded. It was met with applause and what have you. But here we are, one tiny Palestinian flag, and they go bananas. Well, look, the French have a history of revolution. I mean, contrary to what we think about Europeans, and I think a lot of our Americans' opinions about Europeans are attributable to how we view the British. Unlike the British, the French don't take stuff lying down, Rick. Yeah. I mean, look at the nonstop yellow vest protests before COVID hit. I think the Palestine issue is pushing the people of France to the brink. I mean, they were already wary of what was happening in Ukraine and Russian media being shut down to control the narrative. But Palestine's images can't be stopped on social media, Rick. So they're at a brink.
And I have a guest coming up in a little while who is in many ways agreeing with what you say, that this seems to be nonstop at this point. I don't know what the French are going to decide. They seem to be moving in that direction. We'll continue to follow it for you here on Direct Impact. We're going to talk now about a decision that seems to come out of left field, by the way. It's actually kind of surprising to me in particular because I happen to be born in this country. It's not every day we see the U.S. State Department do something that makes sense. But I think we have a winner here. You ready? The U.S. has had an economic stranglehold on the Cuban economy for more than 60 years now, dating back to when JFK was the president of the United States. It is purely a political tool that has been used mostly by presidents and senators and members of Congress to get elected while doing nothing for the people of Cuba or the people of the United States. But believe it or not, the U.S. is now loosening this embargo by allowing Cubans who are part of the burgeoning private business sector there to have banking accounts in the United States for the first time ever so they can conduct business. This is a big deal. These small businesses in Cuba, by the way, who have created a flourishing entrepreneurship with the permission of the Cuban government, they're called MIPIMES. Here we go.
MIPIMES employ nearly a quarter of a million people in Cuba. More than 70% of them left a job working for the state. Workers' salaries at MIPIMES can be significantly higher than those at state-owned companies. MIPIMES are expected to account for 10% of Cuba's GDP in 2023.
It's amazing. These guys just started putting up little businesses, and before you knew it, people were going and buying their stuff from them rather than from government stores, so it's working. Look, it breaks my heart to see how the Cuban people, my family, have suffered. Millions of them have left the island because of the economic conditions. But you know why I think this thing that I'm reporting on, that we're reporting on right now, is in the right direction, Manila? It's being criticized by both. It's being criticized by the left, and it's being criticized by right. And in my book, usually when it gets criticism from both sides, that means it's a good idea.
I agree. That's exactly it. If you are getting flack from both sides, all sides, that means you're doing something right. So Biden's moves to loosen this banking regulation with non-governmental people, I think it's important to highlight that part. It has to be non-governmental people on the island, is a step in the right direction to build on what the Obama administration had done in thawing ties that the Trump administration then quickly reversed. You know, while this is a step, I would say, in the right direction, I would still be wary given what we just saw the U.S.-led G7 banksters do in stealing Russian state money and their interests just last week. So I would say this is a cautionary tale. I think it's celebrate, but be wary, I would say, in Cuba.
You're right. You're right. It's something that we need to watch. I think it's important, and I think it's a step in the right direction. Also in the news, the trial of former President Donald Trump has finally come to an end. Both sides presenting their closing arguments, and now it's in the hands of a jury to decide if Mr. Trump broke the law when he paid off a porn star so that voters wouldn't find out about whatever relationship he had with her. If the jury thinks he did it for political reasons and that's proven, then they could find him guilty of campaign finance law violations. If not, well, then it's just a payoff, and it's really not against the law. That's what's key here. Now, look, we can't show you the closing arguments, and by the way, they went on forever because there were no cameras in the courtroom. So instead, we're going to let you hear from the proxies from both sides. Here are Donald Trump Jr. and Robert De Niro.
It is an insanity. It is an embarrassment. It's an abomination to democracy and to our republic. And yet it continues. Everyone in this case is conflicted, and it hinges on one man who's not just a liar, convicted, someone who's lost his law license, has been disbarred, someone who's served jail time for lying before congressional bodies. And that's it. That's where we are today in America.
If Trump returns to the White House, you can kiss these freedoms goodbye that we all take for granted. And elections, forget about it. That's over. That's done. If he gets in, I can tell you right now, he will never leave. Ben, do we want him running this country and saying, I'm not leaving, I'm dictator for life? I hope this new ad campaign reaches outside the bubble to remind supporters of what a danger he is to our lives.
I don't know about you, but all I can hear is the honking in the background there. By the way, closing arguments went on for like 10 hours. Can you imagine being in that jury? Anyway.
Well, Rick, you know what else I noticed? Behind Bobby De Niro is the man with all the tattoos. That guy is one of the guys from the Capitol Hill police.
Yes, he was there.
So it's important. Important to note who's on whose side, right?
Three actually were there with him. Apparently, they say they're on Biden's side. Why is this political? America.
Well, I mean, it is political. The case. I mean, if you look at this from the lens of let's say a Latin American country, what it looks like is the current person in power, that would be Joe Biden, is using legal, like a legal gymnastics move to take down his biggest opposition leader, which is Donald Trump. But I think more funny about this is the celebrity versus celebrity, because remember, before Donald Trump became a politician, he was a celebrity. So I think a lot of these Hollywood elites feel like they can talk about it. Like this is, you know, on par with what they know, which I don't really think they do.
I'm not sure there's any difference between a politician and a Hollywood elite anymore. I think they're all actors as far as I'm concerned.
That's pretty true.
One final thing. International Peace Summit, soon taking place in Switzerland. It's going to try and come up with an end to the conflict in Ukraine. All the big Western powers are being invited. I don't know if you guys have heard about this. It's the G7, the U.S., the Brits, they're all coming. Guess who's not invited to this thing? The Russians. So it's a peace summit between the Russians and Ukraine. Ukraine's going, but the Russians aren't invited. Isn't that kind of like having a football game between Real Madrid and Manchester United, but not inviting Real Madrid or maybe not inviting Manchester United? I mean, here's how the Kremlin is reacting. They say, to seriously talk about these questions without the participation of our country is absolutely absurd. But wait, if you think that's curious, look at this. I got another one for you. See that? The King of Bahrain is holding a peace summit to discuss a peace deal to end the Gaza massacre. And guess who he's inviting to lead that discussion? The Russians, in the form of President Putin. I mean, you can't make this stuff up, Manila. Think about this for a minute. So Putin is not invited to a summit on the war his country is fighting, but they're invited, but he's invited to a summit to discuss the Gaza peace deal. What?
I'm trying to do the mental gymnastics right now, Rick. I don't know how this works, but I mean, I would say this is more like an arranged marriage. Like somebody's really trying to force this couple to get married, but like the bride's not invited, the dowry is being discussed, and her family has no say over, you know, any of it. That is such 20th century thinking of like, you know, this is Western exceptionalism of us versus the Soviet Union. Well, the Soviet Union doesn't exist anymore. You got to bring other people. It's, you know, the 21st century is multipolar, and the West is acting like, okay, we're going to resolve this with just our side. We're going to tell everybody how this is done.
Right. How patriarchal, right? We're going to discuss your future. We'll tell you what we've decided about you when we're done with this meeting over here. Amazing.
Right.
Good stuff, Manila. Thank you so much. When we come back, our next guest says, quote, the wholesale killing of Palestinians in Gaza will mark a turning point in Western politics. A dark turn, he writes, for modern Western civilization. What does he mean by that? We're going to ask him. He is a geopolitical analyst who hosts a very popular podcast. It's called Sunday Wire with Patrick Henningsen. We'll be right back.
Of lies. If wars can be started by lies, peace can be started by truth.
The importance of WikiLeaks can never be overstated. That transparency is an extraordinary journalistic achievement.
They just succeeded in finding documents that existed and making them available to the world public. I mean, what could be more honorable than that?
By publishing information and sharing information with the public, he was exercising the right to free speech. He did so in the public interest.
I've watched a tsunami of lies and smear engulf him endlessly, vindictively, perfidiously, and I know why they smear him.
Isn't it ironic that no one who instigated that illegal and immoral war has been brought to justice? But the great truth teller sits behind bars, waiting 175 years of virtual death sentence. Are we going to let that stand?
What is Bharat? Is it a travel ad? Is it a Bollywood poster? Is it the deepest yoga center in the world? Or is it something deeper, more complex, multifaceted? Let's talk without cliches. Let's talk Bharat.
To shape out, disdain becomes the etiquette, and engagement equals betrayal. When so many find themselves worlds apart, we choose to look for common ground.
Hey, welcome back. I'm Rick Sanchez, and I want to show you something now. It was put together by my next guest. This is a clip that was on his Twitter feed. I hope he doesn't mind us showing it to you. Here it is.
He's just completely out of control. It's on an industrial scale. And despite everything that everyone's seen, the United States is backing Israel's military campaign against the Palestinian people.
So joining me now is podcaster Patrick Henningsen. He's also a political analyst. He's a smart guy. He's good enough to take some time to talk to us now. It's interesting. You say, and I mentioned this before we went to break, the thing that Israel is doing in Gaza will cause a, and the word you use is a dark turn. What do you mean by dark turn, Patrick?
Well, I think it's a dark turn for the arc of post-World War II, the post-World War II world order, Western civilization in the modern sense. You know, everything that we built, all the multilateral institutions that we built after World War II that were designed to prevent the very thing that we are being forced to witness every day on our smartphones, on our televisions, and on internet sites all over the web, which is a genocide. We have conventions, international courts, the United Nations, the Security Council. So if these things have all failed to prevent this sort of egregious war crime, egregious crimes against humanity, then you could say that the entire post-World War II order, for the worst possible scenario that was designed to prevent, is a failure. Sure. And that means Western civilization itself needs to have a real reckoning right now and ask itself, are we in a regression phase now? Or so, are we still going forward?
What will matter? Because it seems we are living, you're absolutely right, in a world right now where up is down and everything is upside down and nothing makes any sense. And we built institutions to tell people that we have built a consortium of countries and we're all going to come together and make recommendations to other countries. But if those countries are big enough and they have enough money, they just basically shoot them a bird and say, the hell with you. We don't care what you think. We're not going to do it. And yet we have other countries that are punished for doing almost absolutely nothing. I just stated the case of Cuba. I mean, Cuba, for 60 to 70 years, they've been punished, decimated. Their economy has been, for what? I mean, this is a country of 9 million people. But yet they're bad. Israel's good. That doesn't make any sense. Should we just throw it all away and just let the powerful rule and the weak shall die?
Yeah, I mean, the Cuba case, we could talk about that. but that's emblematic of this permanent sanctions, the kind of regime of permanent sanctions. You look at Cuba, you look at Iran, you look at Syria. Syria is a good example of a country that's been totally strangled by the U.S. and the EU in a sort of double-sided vice grip, strangling it and at the same time stealing its oil, which the U.S. is occupying in northeastern Syria. So that's just a real extreme example. But I think the point that we really want to make here is we are now kind of unraveling all of the things that helped to stabilize the international system, i.e. diplomacy, i.e. serious calls for ceasefires. If you think about it, Rick, previous presidential administrations, even both Bush administrations, would have hit the brakes probably 3 weeks in to Israel's bombardment of Gaza back in October, November, because the images would just be too horrific. The political price to pay would just be too high. And also America being an accomplice to this slaughter would just alienate it to its allies and potential allies, people that wants to win to its side. But now in 2024, none of that happened. No diplomacy, no peace negotiations, active calls to escalate. Active calls to escalate in both Ukraine and in Israel.
Let's talk about that. Let's talk about that. And I'm wondering, and I please don't take this the wrong way, and I'm not talking about the fact that they are Jewish, but I am talking about the fact that they are Zionists. And when I have started to look at our State Department under Joe Biden, I see Zionist after Zionist after Zionist who sometimes talk as if their interest in Israel is above their interest in my country, our country. No?
Yeah, true. And not all Zionists are Jewish,
of course.
And not all Jews are Zionists.
Exactly.
That's an important point to make. But the point is that, you know, IPAC, as a major lobby in the United States, had lifted what was kind of a moratorium before about directly contributing to political candidates in Congress and Senate. That was removed. And so you see a flow of money coming in that absolutely influences where congressmen, senators are on policy. And this happens in October of last year. And then you see this complete whip line on the Democratic side, a few dissenters perhaps on the Republican side in terms of funding the war, but pretty much a consensus on both parties. So that capture hadn't fully been complete until the last couple of years. And I think this is why you see this extreme situation where you have the media and the political class going one way on an issue, and you clearly have the people, the populace, even the young base of the Democratic Party going in a totally different direction on this. And that really speaks volumes as to where we're at right now.
Yeah, and I think the point that you make is fascinating because I like your I like your nomenclature when you say entering a dark side. And I think that dark side is not visible to most Americans right now because they're busy working their butts off and, you know, dealing with inflation and watching CNN and Fox News and thinking that's the truth. But underneath Fox News and underneath the New York Times and underneath CNN and et cetera, there are people like you and me who are having these discussions, and it's not about you and me. There's so many other people out there who are having these discussions. And I think we're still maybe years away. I don't know what your thinking is on this. When does these facts, this truth, this reality break through from the BS that we are, most Americans, unfortunately, are stuck with right now? And it's not their fault. They don't know any better, I think.
I'm not going to blame the people as much as I will blame the media. I almost don't want to blame government because, as you know, Rick, government's going to do what governments do. Politicians do what they do, which is pivot, change, flip, lie. But the media, that used to be a fourth estate, used to have standards. But the truth should matter. And the problem is it doesn't matter now. If you look at the whole October 7th and the Gaza farrago that is just totally out of control, it's because, if you look at history, rarely has there ever been a war or a genocide for that matter that wasn't based on lies and deception. You can't rope in the public to back something as audacious as this without a complete bevy of lies and propaganda. And I think we saw that on October 7th. And unfortunately, a lot of these things have been debunked in recent months. But you look at the words coming out of Joe Biden's mouth or Tony Blinken, they just keep repeating these tropes that are simply not true, statements of that are not never happened, videos that they claim they saw, which never have been seen by anybody. So we're being ruled by a whole series of lies. And that's what's really behind these emotive themes of these high profile events. Atrocity propaganda is really pushing a kind of alternative reality. And unfortunately, that's the track that these people are on. But, and we're not on the same track. The people who get their news from alternative sources, look at the polling of recent, is very, very clear. If you watch cable news, it's like 70% or something in favor of Israel. If you don't, it's the opposite. So you can see right there. We all knew this was true, Rick. But now you can see it's proven. It's scientifically proven.
That's a really great point, Patrick. I think there's almost a justification for the things that we thought were true right now, based on the polling that we've seen. People who get their news from social media, people who get their news from TikTok, people who get their news from alternative sources have a completely different view of the world than the people who get their news from the CNNs and the Fox Newses and all that other crap, which is basically paid for by Raytheon and several other big companies. Speaking of Ukraine, and you mentioned that a little while ago, I mean, not to pick sides here, but I was curious the other night, and I did a little Googling, and I found out the number of children killed in the Ukraine war so far is minuscule. The number of civilians killed, according to international sources, is like 10,000, which is horrible. No civilian should ever be killed. But the number of civilians killed in a war that's lasted almost 2.5 years now in Ukraine is 10,000. Meanwhile, the war in Gaza, or the attacks on Gaza, have already killed like 30,000 to 40,000 people. I mean, what does that tell you?
Well, what it tells you is if you look at the UN figures on this and you look at other war monitoring NGOs and so forth, that the war in Ukraine, okay, it is per capita has the lowest amount of civilian casualties of anything in the modern era. If you compare the amount of conventional arms that have been expended so far in 2 years, what does that tell you? Who is the most powerful actor there? It's clearly the Russian Federation are taking meticulous care to avoid civilian casualties. Otherwise, you would not see these numbers. So this basically belies the myth that is being pushed by the West, that Putin is committing genocide in Ukraine. It's just the opposite. And so what you really see there is something very akin to a civil war, something very akin to a major military intervention. And we can argue about the history and the borders and the Donbass and who's Russian, who's Ukrainian. But the bottom line is, it is not the scorched earth type of military operation that the United States itself or Israel will conduct and not ask any questions and demand no accountability by the end of it. Look at Iraq, look at Libya, look at all these other terrible situations. And now look at the situation in Gaza.
Speaking of numbers, I checked those too, and I think Iraq is somewhere, civilian deaths were somewhere between 500,000 to 900,000. And we're going to compare that to 10,000 in Ukraine. It doesn't seem like a fair fight. Patrick, you've been an absolute delight to talk to. You're a smart guy. Good luck with your podcast and, you know, keep up the good fight, man. We'll look forward to seeing you again. We'll have you back, okay?
Thank you. Thank you very much. Cheers, Rick.
All right. That's our news. Remember to always look outside your own box when you're looking for truths, because truths generally don't live in boxes. I'm Rick Sanchez. See you next time.